This time, though, I'm coming to you instead of from Narn, I'm coming to you from Canamalika country.
Hey, you've moved.
Yes, I've moved. And so I start by acknowledging the people who have been the custodians of this land and the very able ones of this land and still struggling to be so. The people, the leaders of the Lebamarana and the Pangamini people. And I pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and still struggling for the protection of their country and of their own lives.
Beautiful country.
Yes, I'm just beginning to learn about it. Hopefully more opportunities are going to emerge in the next few weeks.
We're coming to talk about something less savoury than the beautiful country you're in. We're going to talk a little bit about budget.
I think the best way to tackle any discussion about the budget is not so much to, pick out all any specific details that many other very good commentaries have latched upon. There might be one about public education that we'll come back to, because I think we need to emphasise just how appalling this budget really is with that particular example. But what I'm interested in is where, and I think we have to pay attention to where the budget is relative to the overall standard of living and what's going to happen during the period when the official election gets underway. We are going to have a titanic struggle over how the standard of living for 90% of Australians is going to be formed in the next few years. And that struggle is going to be condensed into the election period. At the present time, the standard of living is dominated by three major things. Firstly, what's happening to transition from a carbon-dominated capitalist economy to some sort of transitional form that is both democratic and decarbonises. In other words, to start the process of slowing global temperature rises and the consequences that go with that.
Or frying the planet.
So that's about the quality of life. Standard of living is about the quality of life. Then there's the economic standard of living. And the budget is one of the two really big events of the year that we could probably say three, but when you take into account what the Reserve Bank gets up to. But it is one of the principal events of the year that determine the standard of living to one degree or another. In other words, it sets the level of the social wage. That which is returned to the 90% flowing from the taxes that they have contributed, that which is returned to them but has a social value to them. And here we are talking about everything from public health, public transport. We're talking about dental care, early childcare, public education, and so on. However, coinciding with this period, there is also the annual wage review. And the annual wage review is now underway and has taken another decisive step in its bureaucratized and disempowering broken rules process. With this week, yesterday was the deadline for the first submissions from interested parties, as they're called, about whether there should be an increase in the national minimum wage and the minimum rates in awards, when that increase should occur, and to whom it should apply. And so we have the submissions in. Perhaps I'll just go through some of the submissions and then talk...
Well, we know that the ACTU has put forward 5% increase across the board.
Yeah, the ACTU submission or claim, whatever you want to call it, I'm old school and like to still talk about it as a claim because that's how we should talk about it, 5%. The Australian Industry Group has proposed that 2% is enough for low-income people.
Which is below the inflation rate?
It's below the current inflation rate quite significantly.
And so it's a pay cut.
It's a pay cut. The restaurant restaurant and catering industry association, for all of those of you, your listeners who are HOSPO workers. Or,
yeah, yeah. What are they saying? Naught or minus?
They're supposing there should be nothing.
Yeah, yeah, naught.
Zero.
Yeah.
And the two governments have put in submissions. The Victorian government is proposing an increase of 3.5%.
Oh, that's interesting.
And the West Australian government has said it should be meaningful.
Meaningful.
Yes. So the answer is meaningful. And there are various others. There are individuals. One of the two individuals of the 13 submissions altogether is Adam Band, who makes a submission as an individual but on behalf of the Greens. And he says there should be, the increase should take the minimum wage to 60% of the median wage.
Ah, hmm.
Now, that is ACTU policy.
Oh, that's fascinating. Hmm.
Right? Now, we can come back in a future discussion about what that means.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
5%, the ambit for all practical purposes, in the struggle, if I can use that phrase, is going to be for somewhere between 0 and 5%. And in this case, at this stage, without going into all the detail of the submission.
Before you do that, one interesting point I'd like to make is that, generally speaking, previous to this year, whenever there's been an announcement by the ACTU about increase in the minimum wage, most of the mainstream newspapers have headlines which, I mean, they don't even need to create them each year. They might as well just do it as a historical thing, because they always say predictably, we're all going to be ruined. You know, it's the end of the world as we know it, right? Because they're asking for an increase in wages. But this year it's been quite muted and suppressed.
Well, so far it has. And it is going to be interesting to see how this plays out. So the standard of living, as shaped through the social wage captured in the budget and the industrial wage, is a central focus. And regrettably, for reasons that I think need some discussion at some time, I would say that the annual wage review is the most misunderstood, underrated and undervalued economic event within our own labour movement, by the core of activists that drive the activities of our unions, each one, and also our movement generally.
Why do you say that?
Because in every discussion I've had with especially young and emerging, the core activists who drive a lot of activity and do wonderful stuff, they just, when you discuss the annual wage review with them, the response is dominated with a blank look.
Why is it so important?
It's so important because it determines whether those on the lowest incomes, not those just at the minimum rate, so the minimum rate at the moment is, if I remember correctly, $20.33 per hour, and that's the benchmark rate to define wage theft. Anything below that, if you're a junior or something like that, a junior employee, anything below that is wage theft, and that's $772.60 a week. So the annual wage review will say whether that gets increased. But also, it sets the rate, the minimum rates, for every type of worker or classification of worker in every industrial award. So workers in the retail industry, workers in the mining industry, from one extreme to another, each of those, all of those workers, their minimum standards are defined in their industrial award, whatever it is, and that includes the minimum rates for the type of work that they do. So a tradesperson obviously has a higher minimum rate than a starting off process worker, for example. So all of those rates are defined there. And the annual wage review usually, not always, it doesn't have to, usually increases those to what, to some small degree. That's been the practice. You know, it's very rare that an ACTU claim gets adopted in full because it's opposed by employers who want nothing to apply, and it's opposed by employers who like the Australian.
Yeah, well, because this particular process exposes all the class structures within our society completely bare.
You're dead right. It's where the pedal hits the metal.
Yeah, that's right.
You can whinge all you like about wage suppression. The next question is, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, in this case, what the ACTU wants to do is get a 5% increase. What the most extreme employers want to do is nothing for the lowest paid.
The problem with these people who are the most extreme, the extremists, is that they have very... And our government, our federal government at the moment, seem to be blighted with simple-minded thinking. They don't understand the economy, do they? They don't even understand their own capitalist economy.
Well, I profoundly disagree.
Yeah, go on.
I think they do. I mean, there'll be idiots who won't, you know, there's enough idiots. That's valid. But overall, you see, what they understand that the essence of their role in government is to make this particular economy, it is a capitalist economy. Therefore, their role in government is to make sure everything that it can do to enhance profit-taking relative to investment can be done. And anything that is handed out that is in some way defined that we can accept as being positive in regards to, say, the social wage, all of that is done on the basis that it does not do so much harm to profit-taking.
But if you...
I do understand that.
Yeah, I understand that, but the machine won't keep going if they don't put some oil in.
Well, exactly. They do put just enough oil. There is just enough. In this particular budget, the essence of this particular budget is that it will require a mini budget because there is enough in this particular budget that is against the grain and the philosophy of how this government wants to manage the economy in the interests of the 1 to 10%. So at some point, when they're re-elected, there will have to be a mini budget.
Well, they've only outlined a budget that is for a year. I mean, they've gone no further than looking 1 year ahead in this budget.
Well, there are some aspects of it that look into 2 to 3 years, and that's really all about enhancing the prospects for profitability. But you're dead right. It is a budget that's all about getting them re-elected. In fact, as I recall over my decades, in election years, that's what most budgets are about. You know, this one's more extreme than most, especially with the pork barrelling, with the infrastructure commitments and so on. It's more extreme as an election year budget, but most election years, any government tries to produce a budget that will help it get re-elected. If Labor wins the election, with or without dependency upon the Greens and other crossbenchers, they will have to run a mini budget to pursue their very modest program. I think there's enough emerging now to show that this is not a Tweedledum and Tweedledee battle over living standards at the moment. Labor is in many ways inadequate, the program is inadequate, but it is distinctively better in important ways for several aspects of the social wage and for a different trajectory on tackling climate change. So these are the things that are going to unfold in the next few weeks. The annual wage review, so what will be the character of the campaign? If you're proposing 5%, are you still going to pursue the dead-end strategy of economists at 10 paces where the ACTU economist team gets up and argues the case in economics language for the 5%, while an array of employer economists get up and say, no, it ought to be 0% or 2% or something in between, that is more likely to produce something close to 2%. If we ever have even a modest campaign that shows that the majority of working people support the objective of a 5% outcome, then we start to do two things. Firstly, the likelihood of getting closer to 5% instead of 2% is higher. And then secondly, more and more young workers who have never experienced an industrial campaign to raise lower wages start learning to do so. That the level of wages is defined by struggle. It's not defined by the beneficence of economists or the Fair Work Commission or superficially generous employers. It's defined by their willingness to have a go.
Yeah. Well, because we are running out of time, and I know that you've got lots more that you want to talk about, but I want to bring you back to what you're talking about in terms of the PILOS announcements regarding public education.
Well, I think I'm sort of dipping the lid to Corinna Haythorpe, who's the president of the Australian Education Union. Their analysis of the budget, and she did get some good public airplay about this. Funding for public schools has been reduced in this budget. This is a cut to the social wage by $559 million over the next 3 years.
God, and they've already cut it.
That's right. At the same time, funding for private schools has been increased by $2.6 billion over almost the same period.
Isn't that disgusting?
It is disgusting. It is disgusting, and that's why if Labor, and with or without the Greens, is elected, then there will have to be a mini budget, and we should be demanding it as the people. No funding has been allocated for capital works in public schools.
That's just disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful.
This is in the context where just about every school needs capital work to deal with climate change effects like heating and, in some areas, flooding and bushfire. We're dealing with bushfires. There is no additional funding for preschools. This is actually criminal. This is a criminal element of this budget.
So unbelievable.
The Freudenberg, with butter not melting in his mouth, is perpetuating this gross assault on Australians or children struggling to get through their education years.
They're actually attacking Australian children. That's what they're doing.
It's a direct assault on the majority of Australian children. And you could go on. The Australian Education Union is putting forward a four-point platform for what would have to be a mini budget, and of course that includes also a focus upon the reorganisation of vocational education funding. And a significant increase in the capital fund for schools to deal with. In fact, enrolment growth is biggest in public schools at the moment. But enrolment growth is apparently in public schools is at record levels. Apparently.
Well, it's not very surprising. I mean, if people are unable to, they've got precarious work, and I mean, it's very hard to be aspirational in terms of John Howard's aspirational. It's their choice if they want to send their children to private school. Bullshit.
Yes, well...
I mean, if you've got a long memory, I remember.
Yeah, you remember what he said. So this is you know, there's a lot at stake. The big struggle is going to be over not just the standard of living, but the interaction between the standard of living and the quality of life. And we've got to make sure that we win this phase of the struggle by defeating this government and then continuing. And then continuing with it. And if there is a change of government in next year's annual wage review, with maybe a little practice in this year's, we have an escalated, serious industrial campaign to maintain and lift the momentum for a better standard of living, starting with low-income Australians and their families.
All right, Don, that's a good way to finish. Enjoy your new start. In a new land, and we'll talk soon.
Lots to learn about this whole new area, and we'll be in touch. I'm looking forward to joining in again in a week or two.